This is the 1895 podcast, official podcast of Shelburne FC, bringing you news, views and interviews from inside Tolka Park, Dublin's finest since 1895. Here's your host, Stephen Duty.
It was a night when shells were electric, but as the goals flew in, the floodlights flickered out. A performance full of spark, even if the power supply had other ideas. Here with me this week, as always, the hawk to my animal, the rod to my Todd, the meepo to my boydie. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Duty. How are we?
I'm fantastic. I couldn't be better. I really don't think I could be better. And we have somebody else along with us today. The serial shoe thief, Mr. Darren Cleary. Dazzler, hello.
I mean, I've done it once. That's definitely not enough grounds for serial.
Well, look, generally they say with serial killers that, you know, there's a lot more been done than what people actually know about, so.
Dude, you just defamed me there 6 months into the podcast, so congratulations on that.
Well, look, talk to my solicitor.
You have one of those?
I will talk to your solicitor, because I think we should address it this minute. Right now, hot off the back, my Friday was fucking ruined.
Why?
Tell them why. Tell the people why.
Why? Because of a little power outage?
No, the power outage was fine. The disappearance of my most prized possession was...
I didn't think we were going down this road, but...
Well, let's go there. That's literally the only reason I'm here.
Well, the jacket did go down the road.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Has it turned up on the black market?
No, not as of yet, but... Basically, what Dazzler's alluding to here is my van was broken into last week. And my Shell's gear bag was in it. So somebody somewhere around Ballymun is knocking around with a brand new Shell's backpack and a brand new Shell's rain jacket. And they're also rocking around with a very expensive designer gilet belonging to one Darren Cleary that was in the back of the van. So
not even the usual designer gilets that knock around Ballymun. Like, it's not a good one. Like, it's not Montclair or anything.
No, it's not. But look, I mean, it could be worse.
How?
It could be a Derry fan.
Well played.
Making that trip all the way down, all the way. And we know well that's a long, long trip. Although, you can get about 6 cans down your neck in that trip, as we learned last November. But, what a night, Ben. It was full of event. Probably, it's the most eventful first half I can remember in a long, long time. And that's not even including what happened at halftime.
Yeah, I think there's an awful lot of talking points. Mainly how good we are at football.
Yeah, fair.
That's probably the strongest start we've had to a game, I think, in a very long time. Like, it was pure dominance from the first whistle. And you think, look, you go one up, brilliant, everyone's delighted, an equaliser goes in, and you look around the grounds, head starts to drop, you're like, oh, here we go again, and no, not at all.
It was first of all, scoring that early, and the type of goal it was, now, we made a bit of a hames of... like describing what the goal was at the time. Well, I did anyway.
Poor Brian Maher got slaughtered by him.
Yeah, everyone was, see, he's bleeding brutal. Brian Maher is bleeding shy. And I don't know why, but I thought he shanked a clearance and fell to his feet. It's obviously not what happened. Harry Wood tried a defence blitter, which his radar was on Friday because a few of them came off, as we'll talk about later on. But... yeah, just felt the body and quick thinking, Dazzler. Like, just before anyone had a chance to react, it was in the back of the net. Like, Brian Maher just kind of stood there and was like, what's after happening there? He just, body caught everyone cold, and a much better finish than I think I got credit for.
It's so good to hit first time as well. It's outrageous as a piece of skill to even try and execute. It's unbelievable. Should Brian Maher do better? Yeah, like, I don't think he's that. He's not unsighted by it. He has quite a lot of time to see it come in. But look, you have to give Boydie all the credit. It is. You could see why someone wouldn't be thinking that that's coming near them. I think we all just confused it with Jack Moylan's goal in Derry, where that's exactly what happened. Brian Maher gave it to him and just put it beyond him. But what a goal, what a start. Boydie looks more confident and better than ever.
He looks sharp, I think. Like, he's kind of on it. He's tuned in. He's pressing with a mad intensity. He always had that in him, but, like, he's a different animal, a big red machine, if you will.
Oh, that, where is the TikTok, Ben? Where's the Kane TikTok? Why haven't I seen one yet?
I'm waiting.
There better be something in the pipeline.
I mean, I have a few ideas I've seen recently.
There was Fulham player in the mid-2000s, Facundo Sava, I believe his name was, and he used to whip a little mask out, like a little Zorro mask out of a sock if he scored. I want Sean Boyd to whip Boyd a little Kane coming. Mask. Because with his big legs, you'd fit a Kane mask in those shin guards, I'd say.
Dude, if Boydie just scored in the other end, he could run over to Reggie and get one of his Kane gloves off his hand.
The isotoners. look, we're making light of it, but Boydie is... He looks phenomenal. Like, he had such a big part in every goal. He obviously got the assist for Evan Caffrey's. He won the penno and then scored the penno just about. But he just looks... He's unplayable. And I think he's probably buoyed by the fact that he has Meepo there as a two. Like, it's a proper two where I don't think there's as much pressure on him as what there usually would be.
But there's also a real cohesion in their play already in such a short space of time. You look at last season, like, he found it in bits and bobs between certain players, but there was a change up front. It did take a little bit of time, and then someone else would be in. Like, it was hard with the rotation and injuries, but you keep the two of those lads fit, and the way they're playing off each other, sky's the limit.
That it is. Just to go back to the way the game panned out, we obviously think it was 11 minutes, maybe. Boydie got the first one. Only a couple of minutes later, Michael Duffy peeled off the back post. All I could see, all I could picture in my brain was, you know those famous Joey O'Brien training sessions where they just relentlessly defend crosses and defend shots and defend balls into the box? And it obviously comes from not stopping the cross and not looking after players in the box. I would say Joey O'Brien's head was just fit to fall off, Dazzler. The man's eating his dinner. Look at him. Oh, you're a fucking disgrace. Ben.
I was on mute. Sorry. I was on mute. Relax. I had me dinner. It's not a great one to watch back. But they always say you're more vulnerable just after you scored. Like, Derry did look all right at times with the ball and attacking areas. I think we dealt with them really well. It just happens that the only one we didn't deal with well, they scored from. Can't give Michael Duffy that much space. You can even see with the reaction from Sean Gannon, he knows that it's one that we've given away cheap. But look, again, the response, like, we spent a couple of months on this podcast saying last year, just gamble, have a shot, see what happens. And when Sean Boyd did it, and when Evan Caffrey did it, it won us the game.
Evan Caffrey, Ben, starting to get a bit of a penchant for that kind of dramatic ball roll, just trickling into the corner of the net. Not too dissimilar, obviously further out, but not too dissimilar to the one in Jakar last year.
No, it's kind of, he did say he was going to add goals to the game, something that people need to see a bit more of him. But yeah, it's the composure, I think, of the finish. Like, they're easy, like, you've easily seen them shank before. Like, it's not a easy take on, and he does it so well. I think it probably shows that he's put a lot of effort into that. He did say a few of them have come off in training, so it is nice, especially for Evan, to get the goal, because he did get the shout late to be in the team.
Yeah, Dazzler, the manager alluded to that in your interview with him after the game, that Evan probably wasn't due to start. Ali Koo was, and Ali Koo picked up a little bit of a knock, so Evan got an opportunity. But you had the best seat in the house, Dazzler, obviously, when you're doing that post-match interview. The manager's face just lit up talking about Evan Caffrey, didn't it?
he has an awful lot of love for Evan, and you can see why. Like, they've been together probably the longest out of anyone, and he's someone who, like, when we signed Evan Caffrey, I don't know how excited I was. And I don't mean that in any kind of rude or disrespectful way. I'm just thinking, you know, we're signing players from Harps and UCD. Like, are we kind of looking to cement our place in the league for 2-3 seasons and then push on? But I definitely grossly underestimated Evan Caffrey's ability. Like, he's looked really good, and like, he's grown year on year. They all have, all the players. But you can actually see, like, I would have thought Evan was more defensive minded, bit of a kicker in midfield. I definitely underestimated how good he is with his feet, how technical he is. Like, over a dead ball, he's really good. I was having flashbacks of the Pats goal when he kind of took the touch, took it inside, winding up to shoot, and then took the touch. And I was like, oh, please, please. But yeah, you can tell the warmth the manager has for Evan. And like, the warmth Evan has for the club is something pretty special as well. Like, he mentioned walking into the team meeting room every Friday night and looking at the picture of his granddad. He did an interview with the 42 last week, and he had a picture of his own League of Ireland medal and his granddad's one from, you know, the 60s. So it's amazing the connection he has with the club, and then, you know, the warm connection the manager has for him. Because you could see it in his face. Like, he when he says he wouldn't want anyone else, or wouldn't want anyone to score more on that pitch than Evan Caffrey, he means it, you know?
Ben, down to the real business. The dance. The celebration from Evan Caffrey. You got a little story of him after the game.
Yeah.
So tell us, how did the famous dance come about?
He did the interview and he was walking off and he was kind of chatting. I was like, where did the dance come from? He said, I've been practicing that for ages. He was practicing it as Mrs. 21st. And you kind of have to feel for his missus, her family and friends, just seeing Evan Caffrey on the dance floor pulling that off. But here, practice made perfect. It was time to shine, and it looked polished.
I was more impressed with that. Like, I knew he had the shot in his locker. I didn't think he had the dance in his locker.
But he went back for more. Yeah. He went back for more, not just once, twice. Getting images now of Evan Caffrey at home in front of the mirror, just giving it the little... It's amazing.
Not the little, he gave it socks.
He did. When he went back for seconds, I thought that was very funny. Harry Wood on Friday, if Evan Caffrey wasn't the man of the match, boy, he wasn't man of the match, and you could have easily split it between the two for me. Harry Wood, just because he doesn't, yeah, Meepo as well, but I think it's Harry, maybe because of the effectiveness of Boydie and Meepo, and obviously Evan was brilliant on Friday. Harry went a little bit under the radar. He looks
sharp.
Oh, he looks like that end of the season before last, Harry Wood.
Dude, how long and how much did I say it? I think every week to anyone that would listen, I repeat the phrase, Harry Wood will come good.
Yeah,
all the way up until the last game of the season, I was like, Harry has a moment in him. He just needs that little bit of time. And you can see a full preseason under his belt. He's sharp. He's there. He's working hard. He's spraying passes around the pitch like it's no one's business.
And he went on a ridiculous dribble as well in that second half. Say he got felled 3 or 4 times in the one little passage, but just making a show of people. He seems to have that bit of magic back in him. I don't know whether it's... He wasn't match fit when he came back last year. I think that was pretty obvious for everyone to see. He was fit, but he wasn't match fit.
Yeah, he's just playing catch up with everyone else. I think
he still hit the crossbar 10 times. Like, he still looked like he could have had a massive moment last year.
Yeah, he did. He loved the crossbar.
Well, he had the biggest moment of the season. So look, if he pops up, if he does nothing else for the rest of the season and pops up with a moment like Derry away come the end of this season, I think we'll all be happy.
I'm going to shock you here and make a bold prediction. I think Harry Wood has a lot of moments in him this season.
Let's hope so. Right. The power cut was hilarious. Well, it was the split second when it happened, I just burst out laughing because I presumed the lights are just going to come back on. But I Ben, me and you, I spent most of it with you, and we were in that weird scenario where we kind of got stuck in the tunnel area. You're kind of standing there like, no, there's nowhere to go. You can't really do anything. But what I did notice was the Shells bench on Friday, like the players that were on the bench, they all turned into electricians, didn't they?
Yeah, I've never seen a group turn into fully qualified electricians quicker.
Ray Tullock. Oh, there's no way they're going to get that fuse board fixed now for the rest of the game to be played. Yeah. Never heard the likes of it.
And then someone said, oh, I don't know who it was, a shout came from somewhere, I might have to be played on Saturday. And then Ray goes, I hope it's not played on Saturday. Hope we can just finish the job. And to be fair, we got the job finished.
We did. It was just a mad...
It
felt like 2.5 hours, which was just everyone running around, panicked. Well, again, we only see in that kind of one little area, Ben, but...
There was a lot of panic in that one little area.
There was. I don't know what the rest of the ground was like.
I was kind of like, if I go outside, someone will come up expecting me to know something, and I'm not spreading any kind of information around that I don't know completely. But we did get a little update, and I remember it was very funny. I was standing beside you in the tunnel, and Richie came back in, and he told us exactly what was going on. And I relayed that information to the subs and players that are on the bench. I think it was John O'Sullivan turned around and goes, that's a man that knows his stuff. I'm like, no, I'm a man that knows what another man who actually knows his stuff told me.
Poor Richie. Richie earned his corn on Friday night, I think it's fair to say. If for nothing else, the amount of running around he had to do.
If that man had one of Mero's trackers, I'd say he'd be up there with the most prominent covered.
The manager as well spoke in his... Dazzler, I think it was his post-match, his press conference, was it, where he said about, he kind of just like went off on his own and kind of just walked around the ground for a little while.
I mean, what other chance would you get to do that in front of 5,000 people? It's pretty unrivaled. Yeah, it was a strange night. Like, I know there was panic and there was chaos, but at the same time, there was quite a calm and professional approach to it. Like, there was... as I think if that happens 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, there's not a hope that that game continues. There's not a hope that it's fixed. But there was something about it, like there's a real kind of, it certainly feels in the background at the moment, there's the right people in the right roles equipped to deal with difficult situations. And like I was on the way over, we were meant to have Team Power 1, they were in, club charity partner, they're meant to be presented at half time onto the pitch. So I was pretty much at the dugout, and some of the injured players were walking through the way, and the lights just went. And it's that kind of funny few seconds where it's like, your eyes had to adjust, you couldn't see anyone. And I went into the boardroom, and I was expecting blood and guts and thunder and screaming and shouting, but straight away it was just four people huddled around. The door was open, there was lamps on the phone. Right, what is it? Can we touch it? No, it's ESP. What's the ESP emergency response number? Do we have anyone in the ground that works in the ESP? And it was all very, like, matter of fact. How do we solve the problem? Like, get the message to the referees. Who from the ground is from the FAI? Where's the delegate? Like, it wasn't this scene of pandemonium. Like, even the subs were pretty calm about it.
And out of all the darkness came a new signing. But before the chat about the new signing, in the manner, the way the week went, or the way Friday went, we had our own technical issues, man, didn't we? The pod decided to only pick up 18 minutes of your two audios, whereas I have all mine. So unless everyone wants to listen to me talk to myself like a big dope, this is now us going into the second part of the pod that we've already recorded, but we're just going to talk about everything all over again. How's that sound?
Great. So happy to be here.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, this part is not a lie, but we had a long debate about the one player Doody wants to drop from the starting lineup. And after that debate concluded, Doody mysteriously lost the audio. So,
yeah, Doody just basically caned the world and said, a certain someone was terrible, and he asked us who we wanted to drop, and we said no, and he said, well, you're wrong, and that audio was suddenly lost.
Let's never speak of it again.
It's just not true. It's just not true. Anyway, moving swiftly on. You two got to meet our brand new loan signing, James Norris. He's on loan from Liverpool till the end of the season. Dazzler, Ben, first impressions?
Yeah, very good. I think people will affectionately dub him Chuck Norris. I think he's already been dubbed that, but yeah, he's a nice fella. Comes across really well. He seemed really excited to be here. I think you can kind of tell when you meet someone if they've been sent here, they're happy to be here, and he seems really, really happy to get started. And I think he trained today, so I think it's only positive, yeah.
Dazzler, he's been on the bench four times this season alone for Liverpool, who, of course, are probably on course to win the Premier League. He's played with some world-class players coming up. It's probably a massive positive for the club here that Liverpool were willing to send somebody on loan here. I know Luke alluded to it in his comments about the signing. He basically said Liverpool are really kind of analytical the way they work their loans out. They don't just send a player to a certain place on loan for the sake of it. It's obviously to do with the way we play, or there's something they see in the Shells team that'll help bring them on. So they're all positives for the club, aren't they?
Yeah, and look, you can see why they'd be really picky about where their players go. I mean, they've had him since he was 9 years old. They've kept him. Like, clubs like Liverpool would have like relatively high churn rate at academy. If you're not showing promise at all the age groups, if you're looking like you're going to age out, like, it's professional football, it's a pretty ruthless environment. But they've kept him, and they've kept him in or around the first team. Like, you lads would even see it from the young lads the manager keeps around our first team. Like, they're the lads that obviously he thinks will have a big career in, the likes of Ali Topju, Dan Ring, Ray Afour. If I'm forgetting anyone, I do apologise. James Roach, obviously, has been on the bench for us. So you don't keep players like that around your first team unless you see a whole heap of potential. And the fact they are sending him here would be an unbelievable endorsement of his ability. The fact that they think he would add to a senior men's team looking to qualify for Europe and win a title this year. And that we think he would add to that. So it's a really, really good signing. I have a little nugget, which was funnier the first time around when you didn't actually know the answer. But can you tell me which one of the current Shells team this work has played against? You can, because we did this 25 minutes ago.
It is Tyreek Wilson.
Hey, it's Tyreek Wilson.
That has shocked me.
But no, he's really highly rated in England. A lot of experience at England underage level. I read today he played quite a bit with Jude Bellingham, and then I heard about it on a podcast. That little last mention of the podcast, power outage. But no, brilliant pedigree, great signing. And as Ben said, like, it's good to meet them in or around Tolka, because you get a feel for how happy they are to be here. And he actually remarked about the welcome he's got since coming in up to training this morning, and how happy he is to be here.
He plays mostly as a left back. He can play centre midfield as well. Ben, do you think that kind of nods towards maybe himself and Tyreek being the two competing left backs now? Do you reckon this says that Cam has looked at more of a centre half option than a left back?
I don't know. I think you value Cam for his versatility and what he can bring to the team. Are you alluding to dropping someone there, Doody, maybe?
No. Just competition for places. I now look at it that there's four centre-halves there kind of competing for those two spots, the four of us being Lewis Temple, Paddy Barrett, Sam Bone, and then Cam. So
yeah, I think that's a fair assessment, and probably it's something you've heard a lot, especially around the club. Competition is the best coach, so it's a brilliant environment, I'd say, for him to come into, because it is such a close-knit group, but it is a competitive group. There is a desire to do well. So I think you get an awful lot out of this and working with the group.
And is he legit called Chuck? Like, is that what he is called in Liverpool?
That's what he was introduced to.
Yeah, that's what he was introduced as, yeah.
Yeah, first time he came in, Luke said, "This is Chuck. Chuck Norris." I doubt he's seen Walker, Texas Ranger. He's only 21, so might be a bit before his time, but I asked him about it, and he said he was given the nickname when he got to Liverpool. Probably a real Scouser thing. What's your name? You know, James Norris. Ah, Chucky. Go on, Chuck Norris. probably has no idea why he's called Chuck. But yeah, that's his nickname and has been since his first day at the Liverpool Academy.
I was also very shocked. Dan said he hadn't seen Walker, Texas Ranger. Hadn't seen Dodgeball either.
Dazzler hasn't?
No, Chuck.
Oh, sorry.
Chuck Norris has not seen Dodgeball.
Yeah, Chuck Norris. We showed, obviously, you know, Ben did a TikTok today. You have to show them why you're asking them to smile goofily before they'll agree to it. And everyone kind of laughed at the punchline, and he laughed too. And turns out he's just laughing to be polite because he'd never seen it. And I was like, sign of a good fella. You know, has no idea what the joke is, but laughs along anyway.
Yeah, I'm with that. I'm all for that. Speaking of good fellas, before we do our listener questions, we're going to do our Richie Rankins. So I was asked to clarify this, what this whole thing is about. You can be a Richie Baker. Richie Baker, multiple league winner with the Reds, one of the best wingers we've ever had. All around good fella. So that's your Richie Baker. Or you could be a Richie Winter. Bottom feeder. Screwed us out of cup final. What were the two things I said? Takes sweets from kids and doesn't flush the jacks when they're finished. That's your Richie Winter.
And so, just point out to any solicitors listening, that is, of course, satire.
That's what the award stands for, but is not what Richie Winter stands for.
No, of course not. Of course not. So, my Richie Baker, we'll start with the positives. There was a vox pop done after the Bowles Rovers game in the Aviva, and there was a young Rovers fan who just goes on this really aggressive, bitter tangent about Bowles not being able to sell jerseys, or only selling jerseys, and all they've done is sell jerseys, they haven't won anything, and so on and so forth.
Streeburn-esque.
Yes. So he is my Richie Baker. Ben, hit me with yours.
That's a very good choice. I'm going to give mine to someone who was obviously a massive help, making sure the game went ahead. And the first time, I think, apart from Richie Baker getting the Richie Baker, another Richie gets it. Richie, you, I'm sure people have probably seen around Talca, tall fella in work bottoms, was run off his feet for going from the fuse box back in to the Johnny's room and around the stadium pretty much trying to fix the problem. And look, I think the correct title is facilities manager, so he's looking after the place. So it's great to see that he was able to help us, and he was a massive part in getting the game back on. I know, look, people came forward and tried to help, but that was obviously very appreciated. But I think he was trying to manage it as best he could. I think he did a great job doing that. I think he deserves the credit there.
Here, here. Dazzler, you're Richie Baker before we get on to the good stuff.
Richie Desai is definitely deserving of it. Like, I think he'd probably deserve, if you gave it out as like a monthly Reds Hero of the Month, he would definitely scoop it for this month because he was brilliant. Even when the power came back on, it wasn't purely smooth sailing. I don't know. People at home wouldn't have noticed it. Maybe other people in the ground wouldn't notice. But I wouldn't say the Riverside lights went back out in the stand. We're like, oh, God, is this going to get a bit ropey? And Richie Desai, who's done unbelievable work down at Talca over the last few weeks, managed to help keep that show on the road. So, and echo Ben, I'll go with a little bit of a different one. I'm also going to give it to a man who was part of a vox pop. This vox pop was outside the Aviva after the spectacular showdown on the south side involving the team that finished second last year against the team that finished eighth last year. And it was a man in a shell's hat who spoke an awful lot of sense when he said, you know what? The game was crap. If you want to see good football, go to Talca Park. But it's the only thing Dan Lambert's done well in 10 years. That man was not any Shells fan. That man was Andrew Doyle, who was chairman and probably the man who helped light the spark that became the Shells revolution over the last 18 months, 2 years. Remember when Andrew came in, he was talking about, you know, himself, Brian McGovern came in. They were talking about, like, we're going to get Shells back to the Premier Division. We're going to get Shells back to Europe. I thought these lads were fucking mental. Like, there's no way that's going to happen. We're lucky to finish mid-table in the first division. If we somehow sneak a playoff, great, but we'll only be in the first round before we get knocked out in heartbreaking circumstances. But Andrew was brilliant. There'll probably be a book written about him, and it will be, I do think Doyle's story is as good as Ollie, and it will be told in time. But a deserving man of the limelight this week, even though he doesn't look for the limelight, and his contributions at the Reds have probably been overlooked. But he was understated, and he never really looked for the credit. I mean, if it wasn't for him, you know, we wouldn't have had the manager at the club, Damien Duff, and we probably wouldn't have kept him at the club, because he was obviously instrumental in the changeover of ownership then. So Andrew Doyle, the Richie Baker winner for this week's pod. And you know what? Talk about Richie Baker of the month. There's the Richie Baker Hall of Fame. I put Andrew Doyle in there.
Hear, hear. No arguments from me on that one. The Richie Winters, I'm going to go with basically any drum at a football match. I hate it. I don't like it. I just think it's dull noise. It just fades into the background. I hate it. It was particularly annoying on Friday. Derry have a real grow for a drum. Not for me, I'm afraid. Ben,
Daz
has something to say.
No, what just Derry travelled in serious numbers to Talca. I've never seen him travelling those numbers before, ever.
I think I said it to you, Ben. Did I on the night? It was some crowd they brought down to watch that, which is quite funny.
And then the insult to injury, the announcement from Andy McGarren. Could Derry fans please stay back for 10 minutes at the end? I was like, oh, geez, they haven't suffered enough, have they?
Oh, desperate, desperate. Ben, your Richie Winter, please.
Before I get into the negativity, I will be talking about someone named in the Team of the Week. Duty, will you do the positive side of the Team of the Week, please?
Yes. Massive congratulations to Cam Ledwidge, Harry Wood and Sean Boyd for getting into this week's League of Ireland Team of the Week. Take it away, Ben.
Well done, whoever picked those people. You have a brain. If it was the same person that picked Rennie as the Manager of the Week, you unfortunately lack a brain, because how? Why? I have so many questions. The main one being, why? How do you give the Manager of the Week to someone who barely got a 1-0 win over the line in their big day out, the second versus eighth derby? Or alternatively, you could give it to someone who managed to steamroll a team that were favourites in his own ground and made it look easy. Damien Duff, I would argue, had a better week. Probably deserved it. I don't really know how, but maybe it's just a pity one. You mightn't get it this much this year. So here's your first one, your only one.
Well, Ben, look at it this way. When you're in primary school, pupil of the week, it's on a rotation. It has to be given to somebody. So some week they're going to give it to like the umphalo who eats all the crayons. Some week he'll only eat one or two, and you'll say, all right, Grant, let's give it to him. This is the opportunity. We'll never get another chance to give it to him. So I got that kind of vibe off it.
Congrats, Rennie, on your two crayons this week.
And now I purposely saved the best for last. Dazzler, your Richie Winter, please.
It's only going to one place, and it is a League of Ireland podcaster who genuinely isn't one of the unsufferable League of Ireland podcasters, and there's quite a few of them, but I like LOI Central. I think it's probably one of the best out there, if not the best. But Johnny Ward's on a mad anti-shell, I suppose, at the moment. First of all, he had this ridiculous take that we stumbled over the line to win a league by winning our last three league games. Stupid stuff. I think only ourselves, Pats and Rovers, won the last three games. So the idea we stumbled, but they somehow charged towards the title is hilarious and also a bit brain dead. And then he went on LOI Central this week and just said the game involving the 1-0 win, which basically went off someone's arse in, was more compelling than us against Derry, which is just objectively wrong. Like, you could show someone their first ever football game. They could come down from planet Venus, Uranus, never seen a football game before, show them that, and they'll tell you the 3-1 was better. So, yeah, Johnny Ward is my Richie Winter, because I just don't know what his problem is with us.
But what you have there, Dazzler, is somebody suffering from what people like to call League of Ireland brain, where they think very, very differently to a normal person. So
one of these great for the league. There's nothing great for the league, you big leeches. Who is it? How is it great for the league, right? How do Cove Ramblers benefit from Bowes winning 1-0 at the Aviva while Rovers, it looked like snipers were taking out their players? They just kept falling. Like they, it was. It reminded me of the game we played them where we beat them 2-0 and it lost about six people to injury.
Yeah, jeez, actually, yeah, I just remember that game now.
That sort of dream team. Someone just taking out the player. Yeah,
sniper rifle up on the roof.
It's good for that game. Just like me supporting Longford and Dundalk is good for that game.
Oh, fuck's sake, why do we do it? Oh, why do we do it? Lucas O'Donnell said, make the Tolka Park pitch worse. The better way we can boil rival fans' piss. The pitch was not as bad. If you were actually on it, it definitely wasn't as bad as people made it out to be. As am I being a bit biased there?
Not on TV. Like, when you see all these comments, you expect, oh my God, how's it going to look? It wasn't even that bad. From where people are pulling this from, it's probably because, look, oh, let's slag them for the football. Wait, hold on, they play really good football. Oh, well, let's slag them about, oh no, they've won the league. But slag them about their pitch, that's it. We have them now. It's like they just couldn't think of anything else to say.
That's complete nonsense. Complete and utter nonsense.
I think the Damien Duff deserves some kind of award for somehow making a pitch that only Shells can play on, but is detrimental to the footballing ability of the opposition, but perfect for Shells, as if the teams play on two separate pitches. Like, that's an unbelievable achievement. I don't think that'll be paralleled ever. The pitch isn't great, but it's been worse. And there's very little you can do with it at this time of year when there's just nothing happening. Like, it was probably the same last year at this time of year. You remember the Galway game where it was literally under a bog and you're nearly like trying to hide one corner of the ground from the referee so he doesn't get a good look at it. It's not nearly as bad as it has been, and it will get better. There's actually more time, energy and money going into the pitch than there ever was. And like, I suppose the manager has probably been the most, he's been vocal about the pitch in the past and getting it better. And he doesn't see it being a major issue at the moment because he knows that it's been worked on to be fixed. Where it's not like last year where there just wasn't enough done with it. Now, like, the pitch is a priority and getting a ride is a priority. It's just, you physically cannot do anything when there's no sunlight and no grass growing and so much water. Like Martin King here. There's not enough water, and happy birthday to Kieran in Dundalk who loves Longford.
Jesus Christ. Trisha Darcy said, my little lad loved it. He'll always remember the day the lights went out in beautiful Tolka Park. Adam Worthington, who scores more goals this year, Meepo or Boydie? Don't all rush to answer in one.
I've already answered this. That's why they scored 30 each. They saw the golden boot in half. Who gets the toe? Who gets the heel? Meepo gets the heel because he scored a back heel against Drogheda.
Very good. Niall Fuller, Meepo's on my mind. Meepo never leaves my mind.
Seek help.
Yeah.
God, we're really flying through these.
Oh, God, it's as if we've answered them all before. Jerry McKenna said, very romantic half time. Fair play to the club for making it happen. Whatever Jerry does in the dark, I don't know. Paddy Mackin said, best I've seen us in a long time. I'm very, very excited. Joe said, we were too good. I was hoping for a less stressful cruising into third kind of season. Well, Joe, you're really not going to get away with that because we're going for it all. And I'll finish with Brian McGovern saying that the fans and the staff were a credit to the club on Friday. And I'd agree. Everyone took it in good spirits. People could have easily complained, lights going out, and everyone moaning and causing a big song and dance with it. But there was nothing, to be fair. Everyone was, again, it's easy to do that when you're winning 3-1. But everyone seemed to take it in their stride.
While we're
we survived. Go on.
While we're dishing out credit, the FAI, who get quite a lot of kicks at times, the people from the FAI who were in the ground were absolutely brilliant. They did everything they could to help the situation. They were professional. They were pragmatic. They were communicative, because I think it's a really difficult situation where the problem is in one side of the ground, i.e. the boardroom side, and the players, the officials, everyone, the staff, the managers are on the other side. So having like proper lines of communication and people not hearing Chinese whispers, and like you're one Chinese whisper away from Derry getting dressed and going home. So the FAI, the people who were there, probably not fair to name them, but they deserve massive credit, because I'm absolutely sure without their kind of work along with other people, the game wouldn't have continued. Like, it really was a load of people coming together to do their best to make it work. And I might have said this already on the pod, I can't remember, some of it got deleted during the power outage, but Rob Harvey handled a very difficult situation really well. Like, I think it's been well documented in the media that the Derry manager was doing everything he possibly could to get back up to Derry. And a lesser referee might have felt that pressure. Rob Harvey was really, really good, dealt with a lot of moving parts in a difficult circumstance really well. And that probably goes back directly to the FAI's handling it, the club's handling it, the ESB's handling of it. Like, there's no one you'd look at and you say, they dropped the ball there. Everyone was at their best to make a bad situation right. And that's what we got. Like, you boys would know well that 99% of the time, floodlight failure, the referee isn't hanging around long enough to get those lights fixed. So credit to the ref, the officials, the FAI, the club, staff, players, everyone. Brilliant.
For the one and only time this season, we're going to finish the pod after praising the referees. Would you believe it? Ben, thank you very much for giving up your evening twice. You can finally go and have your dinner now.
Thank you, Duty. Up the Reds.
Play Red Sails in the Sunset.
Thanks for listening to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne FC, Dublin's finest since 1895. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify, and subscribe now to never miss a new episode.